Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 11. Going to talk about some home run to barrel percentage outliers, some recent news, which is usually never good news, and much, much more to get you ready for the weekend in fantasy as well. Got a little game to play to continue on from last week, and much, much more fun to do so. First off, you can follow myself on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, man?
Doing great tonight, Bubba. Got a actually pretty like underrated sports weekend this weekend with Father's Day, U.S. Open, College World Series in Omaha, a full MLB slate. Looks like we won't have a game seven as the Warriors just wrapped up game six here as we're recording, but pretty underrated weekend sports-wise, so I'm looking forward to that.
Before I guess we get into the fantasy baseball people, we will talk plenty. You mentioned it. What do you think of day one of the U.S. Open?
It's funny. The first when I turned it on this morning, the first shot I saw was McIlroy in the fairway bunker, hitting it 10 feet and then pounding his club into the sand twice. And I was like, this is U.S. Open.
Yep. Going full Sergio on the place. It was great.
Exactly. But it was a good watch. It was a little wind kicked up a little bit afternoon. Didn't have like the vintage U.S. Open. There were, I always like to see like one under, two under win it. I don't think that's going to happen this year. There's a bunch of guys three under. I think the leader's four under. So would like to see a little bit harder, a little bit higher rough. But I think
it's going to get tougher because some of the guys that were there like Tuesday and Wednesday, they were talking to some of the groundskeepers that were trying to keep it wet to start the week before it completely dries out. So I think it's going to get fun the next couple days as it gets windier and dries out some more. We might get some backwards numbers coming up there. So we'll see. There's always carnage, like you said, and there was enough of it. Like there were some dudes that Phil finished like seven over or something. Brooksy wasn't doing too hot. It's some of the big names were struggling, but then there's like the leaderboard always makes me laugh. Like David Lingmerth, Neesmith, like all these, like there's an amateur up there.
Qualified guys, amateurs. Yeah,
you wouldn't expect to be up there, but we'll see. They can do it for 4 days. That's the fun part of it all.
I will say, speaking of Phil, that was the most relatable moment when I think he three putted from like less than 10 feet. And yeah. I've been there. Plenty of times.
We all have. That's why I have my shirt. Three putting sucks. Yeah. So it's fun to watch, but we won't make this a whole U.S. Open show for everybody because Ryan and I could talk golf for quite a while. But we'll talk some fantasy baseball. Let's kick it off with what took place this evening on Thursday night as we're recording. The Mets played the Brewers, and it was an awesome matchup between Tyler McGill and Aaron Ashby. At least it started out that way. Tyler McGill left. He threw a pitch and cringed and called for the trainer. And it was not good. They're calling it shoulder discomfort, but it looked yeah, not good. It's the best way I could say it. So we don't have all the info. We'll find out more on Friday, but initial thoughts, Mr. Bloomfield.
Just unfortunate, and maybe just seems like he rushed back too soon. I mean, McGill did look really good the first. I think he had four strikeouts. I watched the beginning of it. Had four strikeouts through two innings, touching or not touching, really sitting 97. And was like, all right, he's back. And the first start was like three innings and kind of a ramp up start last time out, and then it just all fell apart today. It's I mean, we'll see. Well, kind of the somewhat good news is we've got a few days to see what the prognosis is, but I would expect a lengthy absence just because of the like cringe, like you said, when he threw that last pitch. It was a 92 mile an hour fastball, so like well below from what we've seen from him. And then just given the kind of the biceps, like I think there's just something going on, and it's unfortunate because he's when McGill is on, he is Siler. So we'll see. But I've got McGill on a bunch of teams, and I'm gonna wait to see what the update is this weekend. But I'm not expecting good news at all, just from what I saw tonight.
Yeah, I was super pumped to put him in my lineups this week. I'm like, he's back. This is great. And then this might turn into a drop territory if we get the news. I'm really, like you said, I think it's gonna be a lengthy absence, and this is gonna be a rough one to look at. Obviously, people listening, a drop in a league, you don't have IL options. So we'll see how that one takes place. On the flip side, and Aaron Ashby, he left early, and he was looking pretty good too. He left with forearm discomfort, which is usually a precursor to bad things, but they did say they took him out precautionary. So it was like they're trying to prevent the problem. We'll see. What are your takes on this one?
Yeah, like the forearm tightness, you always kind of cringe when you hear that. But the post-game report sounded optimistic. I don't know how rooted in actual fact and evidence that optimism is rooted in. But they're saying he might make his next start. And that, I mean, for Milwaukee, that would be huge, just because with Peralta out for a while, with Lauer kind of coming back to earth, Burns is Burns, and Woodruff's making his way back. Milwaukee's getting pretty thin, and Ashby's kind of hitting his stride at that huge 12 strikeout game and pretty entrenched in the rotation. So even if the prognosis is good and he makes that next start, like, it's still, you never want to see forearm tightness, especially from Ashby, where like I think volume is going to be a question with him in the second half. I just wonder how long and how effective he'll be as we go deeper in that volume stretches up on him, because I mean, last year only had 32 innings in the majors and was kind of that hybrid guy, had started four games but had 13 overall games. So volume is an issue with Ashby, so I'm kind of concerned, especially with obviously the forearm tightness. Like, I do wonder how long this pretty good run that he's been on will last.
And the Brewers, man, Ashby, Peralta's out for a long time. Woodruff's battling his injuries.
I think the Twins look good.
Yeah, it's like this team was loaded with one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, looking like they're going to waltz through the NL Central potentially. And now the Cardinals got to be feeling pretty good about life. So we'll see how that one plays out, as you mentioned. Ozzie Albies, fractured foot, I believe, or hand, foot. He's out onto the 60-day IL, which is not good, obviously. Orlando Arcia has come into play. He's hit safely in all three games with a couple home runs. He's been actually pretty darn productive, so he could be an option on the waiver wire this week. But are you dropping Ozzie Albies in non-IL formats?
I think I am, and actually this was a question on the tout table this week, where it's like I think Albies was one of the like five, Peralta, Tatis, which I guess we'll talk about here in a sec, is would you drop these guys? And I think Albies is a drop. It's just, I mean, 60-day IL is automatically 2 months, and so that just means at minimum he's out until mid-August. It's just too far into the season to hold, and will he even be back mid-August? We don't know. Like, it's definitely a sign to immediately go on the 60-day IL. Like, if there was any hint that it could be earlier than mid-August, they wouldn't do that. So just the immediate 60-day IL is tough. And I do kind of feel like I'm going back to 2015, 2016 here with the Orlando Arcia fill-in. Like you said, actually, you know, somewhat productive so far, and I think he's going to play. I mean, he's playing every day. I mean, he is the guy at second base now with Albies out. He's hitting eighth in the order, but that's still a pretty good lineup. And we're only in 66 plate appearances a season, but Arcia's got a 13% barrel rate, 95 mile an hour exit velocity, 12% walk rate, 21% K rate. Like, good plate skills, hitting the ball hard, at least while he's hot right now. I think he's a pickup in 15 teamers, probably not 12s yet, but yeah, kind of a blast from the past name who's actually been pretty productive. We'll see if he runs, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. Definitely a 15-team guy. 12s be interesting, but we said the same thing about Brandon Drury at one point in time, and then here comes, you know, it's been quite productive ever since then. So Arcia could be an interesting one if you're feeling the injury bug, which a lot of people are right now. So keep him on your radar and run. Like you said, it's a good team, good offense to be in. So very, very productive. And they are on fire, that team. The Braves are on fire, like 13 in a row right now, and they're doing it with ease, it feels like. They're winning pretty handily. So keep that one on your radar. Fernando Tatis Jr., I think we hinted at it last episode. They were supposed to, like, on Friday, we're supposed to get his MRI or whatever. It came out a couple days later. Not good. They're not happy with what they're seeing. The healing's been bad. So they've already pushed his timetable back. The fact they said they pushed it back, but there is no what they pushed it back to, that makes me even more concerned with Fernando. Like, they could have said, okay, it's like 2 weeks. Where, no, it's nothing. Like, they just said we're pushing it back. So he's out for a while. If you've held him this long, it's almost like you kind of have to, it feels like. But this is the risk you took drafting Fernando Tatis Jr. Any thoughts on this one? Because I think if you got him, you're just stuck right now.
Got him, you're stuck. It's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend within NFBC, where people do need to make that decision, where they knew drafting Tatis, especially everyone that drafted later on in draft season, you were going to pay for a half season. And the draft price made sense. Like, he was going, I don't know, 10th, 12th round. Like, it made sense if you can get by that first half of the year with a stash, maybe a second one if you had to. Now, like, I don't have Tatis anywhere, but, like, I would be very tempted to drop him this weekend just because there is absolutely no timetable at this point. And I know, like, you've held on to him this long, but that cannot factor into your decision making. Like, a sunk cost is a sunk cost. And I mean, every team's different, depends how many other injuries you have. If you're lucky enough where Tatis is like one of two injuries on your team, maybe hold out a little bit longer. But I think people are going to start cutting bait starting this weekend in Fab. I just, without a timetable, with injuries mounting up, it just gets that much harder to hold.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's tough. It's like, it's the risk you took, which, like you said, everyone knew it going into it. But it's like, dang, it's getting rough. And then when he comes back, it's a wrist injury. Those are never good. And the fact that it's not healing properly, there's so many check marks of concerns with this situation that makes it very, very challenging. And it stinks. But that was the risk you took. And I'd be cutting bait too, probably, because it's difficult right now. They used to be red suitcases. Now they're just, you know, ILs next to them. And they're mounting in big, big ways, as you mentioned.
Yeah, just real quick, like, I mean, to play devil's advocate too, like, I mean, Tatis is one of the guys and who can just, you know, flip of a script, just, he could roll out of bed and be amazing the last, you know, 6 weeks of the season. It's not like a starting pitcher where you're going to have to ramp up and you're going 3-4 innings, that sort of thing. Like, he could go kind of balls to the wall right when he gets back. And I mean, that is the appeal of holding him. But yeah, it's a very tricky, very tricky situation this weekend.
Yeah. Jeremy Pena, one of the potential AL rookies of the year at one point in time, goes to the 10-day IL for the Astros with left thumb discomfort. And that's all they're telling us. They sent him back to Houston to get more tests. They haven't told us anything else since then. And you want to talk blast from the past, Ryan. Aledmys Diaz is playing shortstop right now on a very good offense yet again. So it's like, boy, do you want Arcia? Do you want a Diaz? I probably want Arcia, but Diaz in a 15 playing every day is going to have some longevity. And you're an AL tout. Like, all of a sudden, you have a guy that might play every day. This becomes interesting for a guy like yourself.
Oh, he does. I actually need to check to see if he's available in AL tout, just because anyone with a pulse, especially in that lineup, is roster worthy. Let's see. No, he's already taken in AL tout because, of course, it's a 12-team AL, and Chris Blessing has him and got him Diaz for $1. So even Aledmys Diaz is not available in tout or his AL. That is depressing. To go back to the blast from the past name. And like, I think one of the decisions you know, listener going to have to make this weekend is, like, if you're filling out that middle infield, Diaz versus Arcia, I'm with you, Bubba. Like, I would absolutely take Arcia over Diaz. The only thing with Diaz is just, like, he's just one of those guys who just puts the ball in play, kind of like a Abraham Toro last year before he got traded to the Mariners. Someone, you know, not a lot of pop, hasn't stolen a base since 2019, but will put the ball in play and play every day in a good lineup. So that at least nets you maybe 2.5, 3 categories and 15 teamers. But I wouldn't expect any kind of breakout or anything like that from Diaz. I again would probably have him on my waterfall this weekend and in a middle infield standpoint, but pretty low on my list and definitely behind Arcia.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's not one of my priorities, but again, like waterfall, you want to make sure you walk away with somebody that can play for you. Yep. So he's definitely an option in that scenario. Let's talk another middle infield situation here. Nick Madrigal goes to the IL for the Cubs with a groin injury that they're reporting is very serious. So that's going to be a little while. So looky here, Ryan, we have another avenue to playing time for Jonathan VR.
Our boy, mascot of the podcast. Yep. Actually, now probably John Birdie probably is.
Birdie VR's, might be VR's now because that's working out pretty well.
Yes, it is. Yeah, like then this. I mean, this is what we've been saying with VR is, you know, VR is back after the whatever weight training stretchy band to the face thing has started the last 5 days between second and third base. So like VR is gonna play. I mean, the actual like guy who steps in at second base sometimes might be Andrelton Simmons, but we've all been there and we all know who Andrelton Simmons is as a fantasy asset. Like you said, going to be a lengthy absence. So Simmons is going to get some run, but again, it's just one more avenue for VR to start racking up those bags. So if his owner, his manager dropped VR because of the IL stint, I would absolutely be aggressive. I feel like I say this every week, but be aggressive with VR, especially if you need bags, and probably do if you don't have John Birdie.
Yeah, potential game changer stuff there with VR. So make sure you make that one happen. Drew Rasmussen, who was one of the, you know, talk of the town a couple of weeks back, everyone was going to add him on Fab. Well, it's kind of been a rough ride since then. Now there's the IL with a hamstring injury, retroactive. So they're hoping it's not too bad, it sounds like. But the Rays are going to pretty much bullpen this situation until it's back. Thoughts on Drew Rasmussen?
Was like probably my biggest regret in my main event. I tweeted this out a couple of times, but Rasmussen was a free agent in my main, like after he was already kind of good. And I lost out 234 to 232. I was the backup at 232 and absolutely regretted it when Rasmussen was on his stretch. He had, let's see, 6 games in a row of 1 earned run or less and had wins in looks like 4 of those 6. So like a heck of a run, but recently 3 earned runs, May 25th, 5 earned runs at Texas on May 30th, 4 earned runs at Minnesota, June 10th. So like, I don't know if this is, I say it's hamstring. So like not arm related and maybe just he needs some time off and he'll come back. But yeah, it is kind of interesting how Rasmussen has not been the Rasmussen that we thought this past few months or a few starts, at least. The fill-ins, like you said, bullpen game. I think Rasmussen was supposed to start on Thursday, and it was Jalen Beeks for like 2 innings and Whistler and all those guys. I saw like Tampa recalled Ralph Garza, who is that Matt
that
Garza?
Like, Matt Garza, exactly. Or? That's what I'm thinking. First thought in my head.
I was like, is this a descendant? I don't know. I know nothing about him. I just saw that they recalled Ralph Garza. I was like, wow, I've not heard that name in a while. But no, fantasy relevance wise, like, I don't know if Tampa, especially even in the high minors, has like a starter, if they'll just keep kind of going bullpen games while Rasmussen's out for these next couple of weeks. We'll see.
Yeah, that's what it feels like they're going to do, because that's what Tampa Bay does best. The Boston Red Sox recalled Jaron Duran. It feels like he's going to be the Edward Olivares of this season. He got called up when Christian Arroyo went on the COVID IL. Last time he got called up was when Jackie Bradley was on the paternity list. Duran led off again. Every time he comes up, he pretty much leads off. They put him right at the top of the order. Yeah, he's playing pretty darn good in AAA, 6 homers, 11 stolen bases, hitting .305. Really not much left to prove at AAA. It just feels like he's not getting a steady run in the bigs this season. With the idea that he might just go back down when Arroyo comes back, how do you feel heading into Fab this week on Duran, who, if he sticks and leads off, it's pretty awesome, but it just doesn't feel like they're ready to keep him there.
Yeah, it's frustrating. That's a great comp, is the Edward Oliveras comp, as many times, I think it's like five times that they can send him down now in the new CBA. It's frustrating because, like you said, he's either leading off for one of the best lineups in baseball the last few weeks, or he's in AAA. And in terms of like Fab this weekend with Duran, I'm going to be very tepid in my bidding because I think that roller coaster is just going to keep going. So there's Christian Arroyo, but there's also Kike Hernandez, who is on the rebound and probably slots right back into center field, which is where Duran has been playing these last two games. So like once Kike's back, he should play over like Jackie Bradley in Boston's outfield. But I don't know if Boston will do that. I can see Duran getting sent back down this time next week if everyone comes back healthy from the IL. So it's going to be frustrating. Like, I'm going to be, like I said, very tepid in the bidding just because I believe in the skills. I don't believe in the long-term playing time right now for Duran, which kind of sucks because he's been good.
I'm 100% with you on that. And that's the struggle bus there. He's been really good, and we all loved him last year. People were very aggressive on trying to pick him up, and now it's the same problem all over again. It was this time last week or the week before, we were all excited about Edward Cabrera and his two start coming up and going on the Fab and all the great stuff. And his first start was really, really good. And his second start was not that great. And now he's on the IL with right elbow tendonitis, which does not make you feel warm and fuzzy at all. So to me, it's just move on from Mr. Edward Cabrera. But do you have any other thoughts on this situation with the Marlins?
I'd probably at least in like an NFBC in a 15 teamer hold and just see like how serious that this is at the time we're recording. We don't really know. Like you said, it's just kind of tendonitis. So I think you hold for a little bit, see what happens in terms of like his replacement. It's Daniel Castano, who has not really done much. Triple A, I'm not that excited about. He's one of the guys when we do our weekly streamers, he was one who came up for pitching in that wasteland, which we'll get to in a little bit, but not too much. I would hold on Cabrera. You likely spent a good chunk of coin on him in Fab, and you at least want to see that through and see what happens. But yeah, certainly not great news. And I know Miami's going to be treating him with kid gloves. If there's any kind of issue, they're going to play the long game with Cabrera, as they should. Kid's a great talent, and they want to be in for the long haul.
Yeah, it'd be great if it's a short-term thing because he is very talented and they need the pitching, as you mentioned. So I guess, yeah, wait and see. But come Sunday, if I have no new news, I'm probably moving on. But again, I do a lot more 12s and 15s. So 12s, it's time
12s, to move. I think you're right in 12s. I probably would move on too.
It's going to be an interesting situation there. Well, stop me if you've heard this before. Steven Strasburg back to the IL. This sucks because he just came back after ramping back up from missing so much time from another injury. And he has a stress reaction in his ribs, which he's had before. And this is just not good at all. People spent a lot of money to pick him up too before this last start. And it feels like he's going to be out for some time. So this is not good for one Steven Strasburg, Ryan.
I was one of the ones who kind of fell in the trap, and we talked about his first start, like down at 92, but we were like, oh, it's his first time back. Let him ramp up. Maybe we'll get back to 94, 95 kind of a thing. And then this, no timetable. Like I think Strasburg is a drop. Like this all kind of relates to and goes back to thoracic outlet syndrome, which is just such a, like, not impossible, but such a difficult injury to come back from and be effective. And obviously Strasburg has had other health issues throughout his career. He's at an age where he's not exactly a spry chicken anymore. I think he's a drop just because there's no timetable. I don't know how long he's going to go when he comes back. If he comes back, it's brutal. Strasburg, absolutely. I know people, you know, I'm glad people get paid in the contract and that sort of thing, but he absolutely peaked at the right time with that 2019 contract coming off the World Series. So,
yeah, he peaked. He got paid. Good for him. But Corbin. Yeah, it's yeah. Oh man, yeah, that's another rough go there. We don't need to talk about that one. That was one I butchered in a big way.
You actually had I think 7 unearned runs tonight.
Yeah, they scored 9 runs, 2 earned. two earned.
He did give up two earned at the end.
Yeah, two of the nine runs were earned. So yeah, seven unearned runs is pretty darn impressive, all things considered. So yeah, that's I guess it doesn't kill your ratios. Let's put that, at least your ERA. We'll see what that does. This one sucked. Didn't want to bring it up, but I guess we have to. Nate Eovaldi goes to the IL. He's sore, but every report, it's back inflammation. Every report saying minimum length, most likely. So let's cross our fingers on this one. But yeah, this sucks. It really sucks, Ryan.
In all honesty, like, I've been probably the most or one of the most outspoken Eovaldi guys in the industry these last couple years. And I mean, to be quite honest, like, have been very lucky with the stretch of good health that Eovaldi has had recently. Cause I mean, we kind of forget, but in 2016 had an elbow injury, 2018, right elbow injury, 2019 elbow surgery, 2020 was a calf, and has been pretty scot-free since then. So kind of playing with house money on Eovaldi the last few weeks. Sounds like it's, you know, I don't know. Backs can always come back to bite you later on. So we'll see. But I will take them at their word. I mean, he's penciled in to start next week for Boston. So sounds like that's a go. You just kind of hope and pray that he looks good in that outing. And this is all just kind of a precautionary thing, which is what they're saying. So. But we'll see.
Let's hope so for all of our sakes, because I have a lot of Eovaldi as well. So let's please make that happen in a big, big way. Walker Buehler, everybody. This one, I was kind of half joking when I kept saying Walker Buehler's broken. Like, what's wrong with him for like the last three starts? I even wrote an article that said you should sell low on Walker Buehler. Did not plan for this to happen by any means, but they're shutting him down from throwing for 6 to 8 weeks with a flexor strain, which means 2 months with no throwing potentially. Then you have to ramp him back up. There's a good chance he misses like 3 months of baseball. We don't see him until September. They're going to make the playoffs. They have no reason to rush him back. They want him for October. This is a bad deal, and it's like time to cut bait. I saw Vlad cut him over the weekend. Like, it's see ya, Buehler.
He's a pretty easy cut at this point, just because, I mean, like, all the reasons that you mentioned, plus he just hasn't even really been that great this year anyway. So, I mean, it opens up a spot in LA's rotation. I guess the timing's okay because, oh boy, Heaney's coming back. It sounds like Andrew Heaney is returning Sunday. He might start against Cleveland. So keep an eye out for that. I don't know how long Andrew Heaney will be back in the rotation. But yeah, kind of the timing's right. He at least slides back in, and Tyler Anderson's safe. And Tony Gonsolin obviously is safe with his 1.5 ERA or whatever he's got. So LA is going to be just fine without Buehler. Yeah. I know you don't send too much sympathy Bubba their way, but they'll be
more than fine. The fact that, like you said, Gonsolin and his cats are doing crazy things, and Tyler Anderson almost threw a no hitter on Wednesday night. Like, it's just, it's wild is the best way. They just keep doing it. I call it, like, I was on the ITL podcast on Wednesday. I called it Dodger devil magic. It's just, they find a way to just make it work because that's what they do. And they'll be just fine. I'm not worried about them at all. Last bit of news, and there was much more we could have talked about probably, but I told Ryan, we're cutting it off at this because there's just too much negativity in the world of injuries. Jacob Junis went to the IL with a groin or a hamstring strain, a grade 2 hamstring strain, which is not good. So he's going to be out for a little while. I was watching that game live, and when he moved and basically just pulled up, I thought it was almost an Achilles or something, the way he started limping. I'm like, oh no. So I guess it's better than what it could have been, but it's not great. And he was actually pitching pretty darn good. So it's like Sammy Long time. They've been bullpenning it. It's not great because Matt Boyd's not back yet. So any thoughts on this one?
No, just terrible timing for Junis. Like, I had actually written him up pretty extensively in my Fab article for HQ, like, after, you know, and I didn't watch a start. I was just kind of hoping that Junis would be able to make his next start. And it's rough because it's like, yeah, San Francisco's getting a little bit thin, as you know, without Boyd. It sounds like Tony Disco's coming back pretty soon. Desclafani to kind of fill in for Junis, but they're getting pretty thin because Alex Cobb's kind of there, but how long is he going to be there? So it's kind of like Logan Webb, Rodon, and Alex Wood hasn't even really been that great for them this year. So I'd be a little nervous, man. Be a little nervous since we just talked about LA and then.
Yeah, they overachieved last year. So I think we're starting to see what should have taken place last year is taking place this year. And that was my biggest concern when the season started. I said, great pitching staff. It's also a great pitching staff that has tons of injury history in it. So like, it's going to be tough to make it. Like, if the pitching staff can last for 6 months, they're going to be there in the end. But I didn't have faith in that happening. So
and we haven't even talked about Rodon. Like, I mean, he's been healthy, but
it's not been pretty. It's not looking good.
And how long is he gonna go? So
yep, his IL stint's coming, folks. Just hate to break it to you, it's coming one way or another. Hopefully, it's just a figure it out IL stint, but we'll see. It's coming.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's talk some positive news. Let's talk the weekend matchups coming up here. It was a fun segment last week. We'll get to our game. We'll recap that soon. But let's talk about some of the fun matchups we have coming up. We have four games for the Washington Nationals going up against the Philadelphia Phillies in Washington. So that's one you want to obviously take advantage of. You got games in Great American Small Park. You have games in Colorado. What stands out to you when you first look at the weekend action ahead?
Yeah, you've also got four between Seattle and the Angels. I think they have a doubleheader on Saturday. So lots of opportunities to get that fourth game. And we talked about that last week. Like, that's why I picked, we'll get to that Ha-Seong Kim pick, which started out so great and then kind of fell. But racking up those extra games over an entire season makes a ton of sense. So any of those four game guys, if you've got fringe guys or bench guys that are on those teams, you want to get them in. Cincinnati, you mentioned Great American Small Park. Yeah, those three games at home against, and what we just talked about, that Brewers pitching staff, which used to be so vaunted, it's now going to be this weekend. It's going to be Eric Lauer, who again has not been all that great lately. You've got the Seinfeld guy on Saturday, Alexander, and then you've got Adrian Hauser on Sunday. So I'm going all in on the Reds this weekend. They have HQ's easiest matchup rating of any team, and that's even with the three games.
The other one that we have not mentioned yet that I really like, because we already hinted or discussed how red hot the Atlanta Braves are. Now you get to go into Wrigley, where it's been hot and just offensive bonanzas. And it doesn't help that the Cubs pitching is just bad. You got Thompson, Steele, and Hendricks this weekend. Mm-hmm. With that Atlanta offense, they rate out pretty well on the HQ matchups for the weekend. And I think it's another one where people go to the 2-4 game series, they go to Great American Small Park, they go to Colorado. I think Atlanta is another one you can have some fun with. Watch the weather, make it even juicier. You saw what San Diego, of all teams, just did for 3 days in Chicago. Atlanta is, Captain Obvious here, much better than San Diego. So let's see how that one plays out. That's a fun matchup as well.
Yeah. Another one that catches my eye is Texas. Cause a lot of the Atlanta guys are rostered except for our boy Arcia, but like Texas probably has free agents on your wire. They get three at Detroit, and it's Rony Garcia, who I picked up for a two step this week. So you definitely want to stream against that the way my pitching has been going. They get Rony Garcia, they get Skubal on Friday, but then Drew Hutchinson Saturday. So that's a pretty easy slate. The toughest slate, I think, of the week, and this is easily HQ's hardest one, is the White Sox. They go at Houston, and they have to face, let's see, they face Framber on Friday, Verlander Saturday, Christian Javier on Sunday. Like, ooh, that's brutal.
Wow.
I mean,
that's
I'm not
row.
It is. Like, and I mean, I'm not like, I'm not benching Jose Abreu or anything like that, but any kind of fringe White Sox, I'm looking elsewhere if I can at all this weekend. That's a brutal weekend.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's got a tough one against the Giants as well. That's not going to bode well. Mm-hmm. Even though we talked about how the Giants pitching and team as a whole are kind of scuffling, you still got Rodon, Wood, and Copps. They face like the three of the better options in that rotation. So that's a, and it's Pittsburgh again. We don't say much. We might get O'Neill Cruz. We might not. The rumors every day, it's a different rumor. Depends on how the wind blows. Yeah. Lately, they just, I quote tweeted it. I laughed when they said they're working on his pinch hitting skills in the minors so he can be ready to pinch hit in the bigs. I'm like, you guys are unbelievable about how you're holding him back. But so keep an eye on that. That could be fun. But it's going to be one of those weeks where weather's heating up, folks. The balls are flying. And we'll get into home runs here in a minute. But let's talk game. Let's talk game. So do you want to recap our game from this past week?
Yeah, let's do it. I got a little cocky.
You can't even be mad. You can't even
split. I know. I don't want to split.
You sounded sad all of a sudden.
I didn't come here to split, man. I came here to win.
As they say, baseball's a long season. We're good.
Yeah, so I picked Ha-Seong Kim as my hitter. You picked Bryson Stott. And just as a reminder, we're doing, so this is over the weekend. This is for hitters, runs, RBIs, and hits. Just adding them all up. Who got the most? You took me to town. Bryson Stott had that, I think, 3-run homer one of the nights. So I had 7 total runs, RBIs, and hits. And Ha-Seong Kim front-loaded his production. 3 hits Friday night. I was feeling good. I was going to start talking trash. I decided not to, which is probably good because Kim went 0 for the rest of the weekend. And he was one of those guys who had that 4-game weekend. So his last 3 games were brutal. So you took me on the hitter side, 7-4. Pitcher side, I took Ramon Marquez, and this is just strikeout. So, like, Marquez beat your boy Stripling 6-4. What I will say, though, like, Stripling, man, that was a week for him. And that was a great call by you. I think he gave up 1 hit in each of his 2 starts last week. Didn't have a ton of strikeouts, but 2 wins. Ratios were elite. I technically won with Marquez over Stripling. But if you're talking Roto and 5 category production, Stripling takes the cake. So well done last week, man.
You too. It's fun. It's a good little competition we have here. It kind of gives us something to dig in on. And let's talk about our hitters for the week. And I guess I'll start and then I'll let you have your floor. But you mentioned the Texas matchup. And this is why I went with one, Ezekiel Duran. And he slid in because what we're doing is 12-team OCs, 50% or less rostered. He's 48% right now. And this guy's been raking right since he's been called up. Big numbers in the minor leagues. 7 homers, 7 steals in his action. He's been a little bit of power speed guy and batting average throughout the minors. Since he's been called up, he's hitting .326, 2 homers, 2 steals. Strikes out a lot, but that doesn't matter because he just keeps hitting. Got a 5-game hitting streak heading into the weekend. He gets on pretty well, scores. Like, we're talking runs, hits, and RBIs. He's going to be, like, if you just look at his last, like, 3 games, he's got 4 hits and 2 runs and 2 RBIs. Let's just do that this weekend, and I'll be in business in those great Detroit matchups, as you mentioned. So I will take Ezekiel Duran, who's your hitter.
And, yeah, that's I like it. And he definitely will not be 48% rostered in 12-teamers after this week just because of the – I mean, even just the homer stolen base. I mean, 2 steals already, like, yeah, and Texas is going to play him. So I like that call. I went with another volume play. Washington gets the 4 games, like we said. And so I'm going Cesar Hernandez. Not the sexiest name, but I'm just trying to compile. Hernandez is hitting either first or second most days in Washington's lineup, and over the last week has gone 9-26. So that's .346 with, 1 RBI, which that's Washington for you, as well as hitting near the top of the lineup and 4 runs scored. So I just think the volume is going to be there for Caesar. Like, he makes good contact. Obviously the power's nothing to write home about. Only 2 steals, 2 caught stealings this year. So, like, from a fantasy, from a Roto aspect, nothing special, but I think he's going to rack up at least a few hits, and then maybe the Nationals can eke out some runs against this weekend. So
it's a smart volume play. Like, it almost made me take some other players that I wasn't as happy about. But now thinking back, one of us should have taken Orlando Arcia. We're both going to regret that in a big way. I can see it coming now. He's going to have a monster weekend in Chicago, and we're going to just regret all of that. So that'll be so much fun to recap next week. Why don't you tell us who your pitcher is this week?
Well, since you sniped me, I was gracious enough to give you the first pitcher call, and pitching's horrible, guys.
Pitching's horrible.
It is. I went back with Mitch Keller. We're going full circle here. Keller was one of our. We were a lot of people were, and it hasn't been great. But Keller, at least in a couple starts, he's made three starts since kind of going back to the bullpen. He switched up his pitch mix, a lot more sinkers. Like, it hasn't been great. He, in his three starts, he had his first start back was at LA, 5 Ks but 5 walks. Struck out 7 against Detroit last time out, or 2 times ago. And then last time out was kind of a dud, 2 Ks at St. Louis. So I don't know. He at least has a pulse for strikeouts. He's not Dakota Hudson. He's not Kyle Hendricks. So Mitch Keller is my pick. I think he'll probably get like 5 Ks. So we'll see if that is enough to beat out your pick, which I'm not totally confident in.
A 5Ks could do the trick if Coors Field takes its toll, because I'm going with Nick Martinez here, and it was strictly for the idea of strikeouts. So kind of, you went with Marquez last week. Nick Martinez obviously taking on Colorado in Coors Field. Faced Colorado at home his last start, 5 2/3, 9 strikeouts, because the Rockies do like to strike out quite a bit. And, he's got almost 24% K rate, 12.2% swinging strike rate. When he's on, he strikes at a lot of guys. His problem is he starts walking dudes and giving up the long ball. That might not bode well in Coors Field. So we'll see how it rolls for Nick Martinez. But if he can go like at least 5 in Coors, I think he can get you at least a K per inning. I feel pretty good about that. Gives me 5+ K potential. And I'll roll with that one. And the options we had this week, I will be honest, Mitch Keller was my second choice. So we're both going with the same guys. But I don't know. I think Keller's got an interesting one, because that Giants offense, man, every time I see a lineup come out for that Giants offense, it makes me think of Major League and the guys doing the groundwork, going, "Who the F are these guys?" It's just because, like, they do it, they win, they make it work, but it's never pretty, and it's a ragtag group that could strike out a ton at times. So it could be a fun one with Keller versus Martinez. It could be a wild one indeed.
I did pick up Martinez. I mean, I picked Martinez up in mixed labor, 15-teamer, and I'm starting him this week. However, I did that under the thought that he was starting at Chicago, which when Fab ran, I kind of pulled like a Pilkington. When Fab ran, he was probable at Chicago, and then I don't think there was like a delay or postponement, or I think he just got pushed back, and so he went from at Wrigley to at Coors, which is a little bit of a downgrade. But like you said, if he can go 5, like that is the thing with Coors, is like he could get run out in 2-3 innings and just not get the K's that way. But if he can go 5, I think you're in good shape.
Yeah, I'm with you. Our buddy Rob DiPietro's in the chat. He's saying he's worried about Keller's velo drop, his slider is traveling out of the zone, and his two seamers' job is to get called strikes, and it didn't. He's not optimistic.
Thanks, Rob.
We'll see. Rob's a smart man. Smart man. He always talking smart. Yeah,
no, those are facts. Facts only. Yeah. But appreciate the support, man.
Hey, you just need strikeouts. You just need strikeouts. It's the Giants. Let's see what happens. All right, let's give the people what they want. Part of this episode, it's Bloom time. It's Bloom board time. Lots of fun stuff. You tweeted this board out the other day about home run per barrel percentage outliers. Why don't you give everybody a little rundown of what we're going to be breaking down for people?
Yeah, so this is and this kind of evolved the last day or so based on just a few comments and things from Twitter and that sort of thing. It's basically just wanted to look at homers versus barrels. And the thought process here is it's something that, you don't need to go super, super stacky can figure out. Like, a barrel is a pretty good measurement of skill. Like, you're hitting a ball at an optimal exit velocity and an optimal launch angle that typically results, or half the time, results in home runs. So the major league average right now is 53% homer to barrel rate. So your average is take kind of your homers, or take your barrels, divide it by 2, roughly, just as, again, just general simple rule of thumb. And that's how many homers you might have expect to have at this point in the season. And so we'll talk about some of the kind of outliers with that in a little bit. But one of the things, like, nothing is that simple in baseball. And that's why it's such a fun game to play. And There's just so much more nuance to just looking at homer to barrel. One of the things that came back was, yeah, like ballpark is a huge thing. It, you know, there are a lot of guys that we'll talk about on the underperformer list at, in Detroit, Kansas City, Oakland. Those are actually the lowest. So Detroit, and again, 53% is league average. Comerica Park is 34% homer to barrel. So only a third of barrels are actually leaving the park in Detroit. The best park for homer to barrel is Cincinnati, which doesn't surprise. That's 80%. So that's pretty damn good. Chicago. Yep, exactly. Wrigley's number two, which kind of surprised me, but they've had the wind blowing out a lot lately. So they're at 66%. So that's one thing. It's just, it's ballparks. And if anyone wants the full list, I can tweet that out and send that out. The other thing too is like when these, so not only is where are these barrels being hit, which park, when are these barrels being hit? We all know how down April was in terms of offense and how it's picked up a little bit in May. This kind of fleshes it out. I took the homer to barrel rate league wide by week so far this season. And every month in April, it was in the 40s. So 48% the first week, down to like 45% the third week. And then something changed and we're now up to about 60 over the last few weeks. So if you were hitting barrels, yeah, something. If you were hitting your barrels in April, you just kind of got a little bit unlucky because the ball wasn't what it is now. Weather was not as good as it is now and that sort of thing. So just a couple of kind of things that I put numbers to that are nuance wise with like something as simple as homer to barrel rate. There was also a really good article by Eno Saris in The Athletic about pulled versus opposite field barrels and how much worse opposite field barrels are. Mostly but due to side spin. We were talking about golf on the front. Like I hit it. I want to hit a draw. I typically hit a draw off the tee because it actually spins further and goes further than a fade. It's the same kind of thing with barrels and where it hits. So again, a lot of nuance, a lot of context, which is just really fun to kind of dig into. But at its kind of general, if you just want to take a general kind of range of what you would expect from someone based on their raw skill and ability to barrel it up, just take their barrels divided by two, and that should more or less be what their home runs are at. Some guys have a lot less than that, and others have a lot more, and that's what we'll kind of dive into next.
Yeah, it's a great stat. Like I think we talked about it in recent episodes. I know Toby and I talk about it a lot when we're trying, especially in the preseason, trying to evaluate guys. Were they lucky? Were they unlucky? And we like to look at the home run per barrel rate. I think it's a really, really important thing because it's like some guys, wow, they hit so many more home runs this year than in years past. Well, how many barrels do they have? Like we look at guys that there's certain guys in baseball right now. We'll talk about them like have like four home runs in one barrel. Like they're just, so there's like at least three lucky home runs potentially. And it's just like certain things like that. But maybe they're pulled, like you said, and that's a big difference. One thing from Mino's article that people should go check out. Another thing he mentions on the opposite field thing, it's been even worse this year because of the different baseballs and humidors. That it's really taken a toll where when the ball was lively, it didn't matter where you hit the ball, it would still fly out. And that's one guy we're going to talk about here in a minute that really is getting hurt by the opposite field approach. So definitely something to think about. And that's why they say pulled fly balls are always great. And there's no doubt about it. And that's why the Pull Hitter podcast with Rob DiPietro makes so much sense. So make sure you pull those baseballs. Let's talk about some of the guys that aren't doing so well, the underperformers on here. And we'll start with Ke'Bryan Hayes. Let's start with Ke'Bryan Hayes, who every season people are like, okay, he's going to do it. He's got like, you know, 20-20 upside. He's got all this stuff. He's got two home runs with 11 barrels right now. So he's underperforming given Pittsburgh, not one of the better ballparks. They're the fifth worst place to hit home runs. And, you know, the weather is not always great there. A lot of factors could come into play with Ke'Bryan Hayes. So what's your thoughts on him? Because it's one of those things where we look at quality of contact metrics. We look at X stats. We look at things to try to be like, okay, you know, positive regression should be coming. But when he's playing in Pittsburgh, is positive regression coming? Like those are some things you got to calculate like you're talking about. So what's your thoughts on Ke'Bryan Hayes?
I actually think Hayes is a really good buy low opportunity. Like he should have probably five or six homers. Like you said, Bubba, he does play in Pittsburgh, which is that kind of fifth worst. They're at 44% homer to barrel as a park. But Hayes is still hitting. He's hitting 272. He's got seven bags. Like the production is there. The speed is there. Walk rate's up. Strikeout rate's the same exact thing as last year. And actually, exit velocity's up. His max EV, which I like to look at, is up over a mile an hour from last season. Barrel rate's up. Like the actual raw skills for Brian Hayes are there with the better power, with the better plate patience, and without sacrificing his strikeout rate. That's all really impressive stuff for someone who is still just 25 years old and in his second full MLB season. So Hayes is someone who's got a little bit shafted so far on the home run to barrel rate. I think he'll be just fine, especially in the power department. I think we'll see an uptick in homers here soon, and he's still going to get you. It looks like he's going to get you a very much above average batting average, and he'll keep running. So I like Hayes a lot here going into the second half.
And if I have to put one more positive spin on this, the three best ballparks to hit home runs in, he plays a lot of road games.
NL Central. Yep.
That's so a great point. Something to keep in mind as well. That's, you know, he's probably already played some, but on a season, that'd be 27 games in those three ballparks. So let's just say he's probably got 18 to 20 more to go. Let's just for fun. That can't hurt either. So keep that
that's
in mind.
Interesting. That's actually something I could do if I had the damn time. It's kind of take everyone's schedules and say, okay, half their games in, you know, obviously their home park, but then other away games, you could calculate what each team's park homer to barrel will be the rest of the season. Like, I actually think that might have value. So
at least do it for an HQ article where you get paid for it.
I'm making a note to myself now, but it might have to be speculator. It might have to be behind the
that's what I'm saying.
The you great at least, paywall.
That's a lot of work. HQ. That's a lot of work. So you got to get a little bit of love for that when the wife goes, "Why were you downstairs for 3 hours?" You got to get something from that. Let's talk Andrew Benintendi. He's been a crazy one because last year he was very, very productive. We saw him hit 17 home runs, steal 8 bags, hit .276. You know, I was even kind of enjoying the value of him in draft day. I know many people were. 2 home runs on 11 barrels, but he's hitting .301. Strikeout rate's the lowest of his career right now. You know, you mentioned the max EV. That's looking good. The one thing that stands out to me, Ryan, is he's usually like a 35 to 40% pull guy, and he's a 28% pull guy this season. He's hitting the ball straight away a lot right now. That could have something to do with it, but do you have anything else on him?
No, I don't have that much more on him. I'm definitely a little worried. Like, he does have that max EV, which is pretty good. Actually, a career high, 109.8. But that's, again, just one batted ball. Like, the barrel rate, 5%, is pretty bad. 38% hard hit rate isn't that all that great either. The biggest thing, and I think it was Jeff Zimmerman to point this out, is the stolen bases. I mean, dude is not even attempting. He's had plenty of opportunities, hitting .300 with a 10% walk rate. 0 stolen base attempts this season. I think Kansas City kind of put the kibosh on Benintendi's green light, because I don't have the exact number, but in the second half last year, he was terrible on the base paths. And that was kind of Jeff's overall point why he was fading Benintendi, is I kind of thought we'd get 10 to 15 bags on a Kansas City team where everyone kind of runs wild. That's been the biggest thing for me is 0 stolen base attempts. So yeah, like that with the power outage, like he's looking like a completely empty batting average guy, which, you know, isn't like the worst thing in the world. I mean, hitting .300 has value. You're going to get some runs and RBIs for that. But 2 homers, 0 steals, man, that's rough.
Really rough, really, really rough. And like, I keep trying to like tell myself it's been over 2.5 months into the season now, so I got to probably stop with this narrative. But you know, there's certain teams I feel like, you know, when a team's clicking, a lot of the Braves, everyone's clicking. The Royals, for like the first month of the season, they all stunk, all of them, and they're starting to kind of get it going, but it's not consistent. That's probably not the answer to this situation, but. And there's something to that too. Like, it wouldn't shock me if all of a sudden they put one good month together and Benny hits like 6 home runs and steals like 4 bases. Like, I could see something like that happening, but that's probably the 90th percentile outcome. So don't get too excited
it's
on that.
It's the Bob. I was just researching this week, just randomly. It was the Bobby Witt effect, man. Yep. Bobby Witt, .216, no homers, 4 steals in April. Since then, 8 homers, 6 steals. He's been a absolute beast.
Yep, he's been awesome.
Not on the homer to barrel list, but
let's talk about a name that a lot of people that don't play in probably 15 team leagues, maybe some 12s, know about, but less than that probably don't. That's Christian Betancourt. And this is a fun one because in like deeper formats, two catcher leagues, people were speculating on him probably like a month or so ago. Like he's going to play a lot. First base eligibility, catcher's eligibility. He's got four home runs and more importantly, four steals so far this season, which is pretty crazy. He's not striking out a ton. And you look at that quality of contact metrics, Ryan, the max EV, the barrel weight, the hard hit, everything is jumping off the page. I just wanted to bring him up for like, obviously give your thoughts on this, but if he's available in leagues, like this is a dude that's kind of got that William Contreras feel to him, but he runs. So this is a fun one.
Exactly. And he probably, it, just because Betancourt's not, I think he was like a former pitcher. He's not a name. Yep. And he was kind of the flavor of the week in 15 team fabs like just last week. So if you're in like a 12 team or even in a one catcher league, like Betancourt is definitely someone who you want to grab just because, like, I mean, for all the reasons, Bubba, that you mentioned, like he's been unlucky with the homers. I know Oakland is. So Oakland is the second worst park for homer to barrel, 41%. But Betancourt's at 25%. So like the hard contact is there. And like you said, he's running, he's playing every day. Every day, because he can play first base as well and has played a little bit of first for Oakland on a team that is just going to let him play. So Betancourt is, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if he's like a top 10 catcher rest of season, especially if any semblance of that speed game continues. I think he's a must grab. Again, probably snatched in your 15 teamers last week, but in shallower leagues, you want to grab him.
Yeah, definitely. He's one of those guys that people gave me a hard time when I said, because I like to get at least one good catcher, sometimes two, just to, like, I don't have to worry about it. But this is one of those years where it seems every week there's like one or two guys you could stream catchers.
You've been
right
saying
now,
this. Yep.
And it works. And it's just one of those deals that, will it work next year? Who knows? Like, it's one of those things, but it's an interesting philosophy. That's for sure. Freddie Freeman, the one everybody wants to talk about, 5 home runs on 20 barrels. 5 home runs, 6 steals on the season. You look at his overall profile, like his quality contacts, pretty much in line with most of his career numbers, nothing too crazy. But we talked about the opposite field stuff, Ryan. 35% oppo rate. Last year was 25, 29, 28, 25. That's his usual numbers. It doesn't seem like a big jump to some, but that's a big jump, especially when the ball changes. So what do you got on Freddie Freeman?
Yeah, I mean, even despite that, like that it's a really good point. Something I did not pick up, especially when because I was not aware of the pulled versus opposite field thing with barrels. And since you mentioned that Freeman stat, like that definitely does matter and is contributing. That said, not worried like one bit about Freddie Freeman. The contacts, I mean, the skills are pretty much exactly where they've been previous years. So I mean, we saw this last year with Freddie Freeman. I make this example a lot, but he was this bad last season, almost this deep into the season, ended up hitting 300 with 31 homers and already has those 6 steals. So like, I think the power is going to come back up. I mean, Freeman has the most barrels of anyone on this list with 20 barrels and just 5 homers. Like, even if a lot of them are opposite field, I expect that to shoot up, especially because LA is the 5th friendliest ballpark for homer to barrel at 59%, and there's Freeman at 25. Like, the power outage, or the power outage is over. The power is coming, I think.
Yeah, it will. He'll get his. I was not too worried. And it gets warm down there, and that's why that ball flies out of LA. So people should be just fine. Before we move on to overperformers, do you have any other the underperformers you'd like to talk on here? Because, you know, Reyes has been hurt. Cooper's on the IL now. AJ Pollock's finally back. Baum is doing what Baum I always thought would do. Baum. And you know, got Baez and McMahon are killing me, but anybody here you'd like to discuss?
I want to talk to Nick Gordon. Number one on the list. I had no idea Nick Gordon has 12 barrels on the season. That's when I tweeted this out, I mean, that is wild. That's more than a lot of who we think are power hitters.
It's probably more than his teammate Luis Arias. I'm going to look that up while you talk.
Could be more than Minnesota's been pretty good as a team. But when I tweeted this out, so I just kind of in one of the notes, at the time, I think Machado has had another barrel or two, but Nick Gordon had the same number of barrels as Manny Machado. And it's crazy. The barrel rate for Nick Gordon is 12%. Like, He's the strikeout rate's at 23%, not walking a ton, but like one home run on 12 barrels is the lowest homer to bill rate in all of baseball for anyone over 10 barrels. So that really jumped out to me just because I don't think of Nick Gordon as a power guy, and he probably isn't. Like, even this barrel rate is probably over his head. But someone who, again, only has that one homer on the surface, if he hits anywhere like he's been these last few weeks, like, that homer rate's going to tick back up. He's running a little bit, got three steals, hitting 254, which isn't going to hurt you. Nick Gordon is someone who, like, I had no idea had been this good beneath the surface, and just not, the results are not there. But that's the quintessential by the skills, not the results. And that one really jumped out to me.
That's surprising. Very, very surprising. Yeah, Luis Arias, 7 barrels on the season. So he's got
can't
him beat.
Cannot touch Nick Gordon.
Nope, crazy stuff there. Let's talk some overachievers, overperformers, I should say. I'm going to start with Brian Reynolds on the season, 11 home runs, 10 barrels. It's 110% rate. The overall season production was slow, but in the past month, since May 17th, he's hitting 320 with 7 home runs and 2 stolen bases. Of those 7 home runs, only 5 barrels. So he's overachieving in that sense as well. And one of the funny things is we talked about Cabrian Hayes' home ballpark. Hate to break it to people. That's Brian Reynolds' home ballpark as well. Now, I guess we could really get down to the brass tacks of it. Is it a right field ballpark? Is it a left field ballpark? I'd imagine, I'm pretty sure left field's a little more spacious in a PNC. But what's your thoughts on Brian Reynolds, who some people were ready to like almost give up on at one point in time, and now he's back to looking like Brian Reynolds?
Yeah, a lot of it was, yeah, that brutal April, 194 in April, 2 homers and 72 at bat. So, like, yeah, he's got 9 homers since May 1st, but the barrel rate is not there for him. A lot of the metrics on HQ, I use at HQ, we call it XPX, which is basically barrel rate before barrel rate was a thing. This is probably 10-year-old metric, but it's really tried and true. It just looks at your hard hit line drives and hard hit fly balls, which in this Statcast age is a barrel. And Brian Reynolds, even in his hot streak since May, has been well below average, league average. He's got like a 82 XPX, and league average is always 100. So he's 82% of league average, which is not that great. So I'm actually kind of worried about Brian Reynolds despite the hot streak. I think if you're in a trading league, you pump up how great he has been over this last month and a half, and I'm trying to sell high. As someone who had a lot of Brian Reynolds last year, thank him for his service, but I think this hot streak is just that, just a streak.
The only devil's advocate thing I'll bring up here is I think he might get traded, and that could get interesting if he goes to a certain team or ballpark. So
that would help.
To keep in mind.
But, that would help, because like, how tough is it to play in Pittsburgh every day if you're him? Like, you're the man. You're on a team going nowhere. That will help.
Yeah, that'll help a ton. Jose Altuve, 12 home runs, 12 barrels. For those doing math at home, it's 100%. He also has a 53% pull rate, and he's got the Crawford boxes in Houston. So he's got the Alex Bregman syndrome going on. What's your thoughts on Altuve?
Yeah, that's probably the most obvious example of like why context is needed, because even though he does show up on this board, the pulled fly balls with the Crawford boxes in that park, like, you actually expect Jose Altuve to actually hit for power. I mean, he had 31 homers last year, actually has a higher barrel rate this year than he had last year on that 31 homer season, and is on pace to basically meet that again. So I would not be surprised at all if Jose Altuve hits 30 homers again, which sounded crazy 5 or 6 years ago, but I'm not too worried about him showing up on this list.
Yeah, here's a fun one, because I'm not worried about this at all, but Jose Ramirez, 16 home runs on 17 barrels. And he's just awesome. He's absolutely amazing, but he's maximizing his productivity, let's put it that way.
No J-Ram slander allowed on the pod. Dude is amazing. Yes, he shows up on the list, but what are you going to do about it? You're not trading this guy. I mean, 16 homers, 11 steals, 6% K rate, 13% walk rate. Like, that's crazy.
It's insane. It's Tony Gwynn stuff for those old enough to remember.
Yeah, like, that's unbelievable. So you can nitpick and this and that. Like, maybe the power won't, maybe he won't hit 36 homers again, but he'll probably hit 30 and get you 25 bags and hit 300 and do exactly what you wanted him to do as a top five pick. So salute to J-Ram, despite his showing on this list.
He's making me feel really good when I said I wanted Trey and J-Ram 1-2. So it's so far so good in that regard. But the dude's awesome. Part of me wants him to stay in Cleveland so he can just kind of keep flying under the radar and doing this. But part of me wants him to go like contend somewhere. So we'll see how that one plays out.
He likes Cleveland. I think he
does.
He's there. He just signed a contract. So
Mookie Betts, after that, his hip was hurting and he stinks session to start the season, 17 mm-hmm. homers and 19 barrels. You're not worried about him. George Springer, 12 homers and 14 barrels. Anything on those two guys?
Not worried about either one. Have both of those guys on my main event team, actually, and have a ton of George Springer. So, nice. That is nice. Mookie, I think I had like the 13th pick and I took Mookie and started with Mookie and Trout, and Springer fell to like the sixth round. I got Alcantara in the fourth round. You'd think I'd be winning the league.
I was about to say, where you got the standings on this one, Ryan?
Fifth, which is good. Like I don't want to poo-poo. Like I'm in the upper third. I've had some equally bad picks, but that core has been pretty great for me. So no, not worried at all about Mookie or Springer.
Here's a wild one for you. Randall Grichuk, who's been just a power machine throughout his career in Colorado, which not a top five barrel ballpark, which people are starting to get wise to the fact that it's a BABIP ballpark, not so much a home run ballpark, which is good to see. People are noticing that. But five home runs on four barrels. His barrel rate this year, I look at it, 3% barrel rate for Grichuk. Hard hit rate's still there, so that's not bad, but it's been really rough. And again, his pull rate, if you just look at that right now, it's 28% this year, and it's usually in the 40% or higher range. So he's not comfortable, looks like, in Colorado. It's the best I can say. What's your thoughts on him?
I mean, I have no I have been a big Randall Grichuk fan. And when he got moved to Colorado, I was like, giddy up. Let's do this. Because
That was our first show.
The premiere edition we had that just broke. The big reason I was excited is because, yes, Coors isn't a power park, but Grichuk has just such elite power, had such elite power at the time that I didn't think the park would matter. And he was a little bit batting average challenged, and I thought Coors would just basically round out that package. And damn, I have no idea what is going on with Randall. Like, this is the type of thing where I just kind of speculate and say hidden injury. Like, is he hurt? What else could this possibly, maybe he just hates living in Denver. I don't know. Change of leagues. Like, that's always hard, but yeah, a 3% barrel rate for Randall Grichuk. Like, when I ran these numbers, that is absolutely the name that came out, because not only is the power it's not down, it's gone.
Yeah.
And the strikeout rate is up a ton. It was right at 21% in each of the last two seasons, and that's jumped up to 28%. So it's not like a change of approach thing where he's trying to make more contact and take advantage of courses as a BABIP park. It's just nothing. Like it's just really, and he's only 30 years old. Like, it's not an age thing. I truly have no explanation for it, and this is someone who I'm going to have to eat, because I was pumping Randall Grichuk once the Coors trade happened and that playing time opened up. And
it was a valid statement. I'm just purely speculating here, cause I've not dug into it. I don't even know if you can find the actual metric for this, but when you look at his strikeout rate going up the way you said it is, when you see the pull rate drop so dramatically, it means he's behind on pitches, which usually is a confidence thing. If you're turning on stuff right away, he's A, either injured, or B, he just lost right now. Like, he's so lost at the plate. The hard part is a friend of mine, I know, I'm asking for a friend, just can't cut him because he plays half his games at Coors Field and just knows how good he can be. Should this friend, Ryan, just cut Randall Grichuk, or is he worth holding on to?
I think at 12, he's a cut. I cannot.
It's tough.
I don't know. You can't have this in a 12. It's just, so one of the things I do, and I do this for the forecaster, it's like actually the first thing I do when I get someone's box is I go right to RotoWire, shout out RotoWire. And I go to the news log, and they've got a really cool feature where like any little injury, they got a little red button. And I just look for those red buttons and see when it happened, what was the injury. And for Grichuk, there's really not much. There's an April 16th, missed three games with a tight back. So maybe something there. I mean, we talked about backs with Evaldi early on. Maybe something's lingering there. But other than that, he missed a game due to illness on May 11th. Like, I'm not seeing anything in terms of missed time or anything like that where he's been hurt. So with no explanation, with skills like this, I think he's one of those guys where he's now like a Coors streamer, where I still probably stream him in heavy Coors weeks, but I'm probably cutting bait in 12s and maybe holding 15s, but probably not starting him that often, which probably means a cut there too.
Yeah, I know my friend just starts him on weeks that he's playing in Coors and benches him the other weeks, but yeah, that might be a better spot to stash someone else, it sounds like. Anyone else on this list? You know, Matt Carpenter, I just can't believe anything I watch with that. It's all right, short portion, right, pretty much. You got Garver, Luplow, Paredes, Rios back on the IL. Anybody else that stands out to you worth discussing?
Not really. The other guy who at least stands out a little bit is Mitch Garver with seven homers and seven barrels. So that doesn't mean like every single one of his barrels has been a homer. He probably has one or two homers that weren't barreled, and then probably has a couple barrels that didn't head out. One thing I did write an article for HQ this week on what we call QBAB, which is quality of batted balls, kind of a three-digit code for each hitter based on exit velo, launch angle, and launch angle tightness, which is important. How consistently are you hitting the ball at your launch angle? And Garver stood out as someone who actually really made some gains over the last month. Like, he was terrible in April, hit 177 with two homers and 62 at-bats. Started to pick it up in May, hit 300 with four homers. Like, that's, again, as a catcher, that's really good. And then he's been on COVID list for, I think, a week now. So that was probably the worst possible timing. So just someone who kind of stands out as someone, yes, he makes the list with only the same number of barrels as Homer. So from that aspect, probably overachieving a little bit, but just the kind of the trend of that production, how bad he was in April, and then he's picked it up in May. Like, when he comes back and he's healthy, wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of kick it right back into gear.
For sure. I like that a lot. All right, Ryan. Well, that's going to do it. We have no listener questions this week. That's a bummer, but it's okay. We had a lot to talk about, as always. Any final thoughts as we head into another week of action? We have Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you, Mr. Bloomfield. We have the U.S. Open, which I'm pumped for, and got tons of baseball. Stanley Cup for those that like playoff hockey, which is great. You have a College World Series. You got a lot going on this weekend. So any final thoughts?
I did mention my Hokies at the end of last week, who unfortunately went down 2-1 to Oklahoma. They were the number four team in the country and couldn't get it done. So we're one win away from Omaha. Did not go. So no other thoughts. Just enjoy this weekend. Enjoy Father's Day for the fathers out there. To you, Bubba, for sure. Like, we put so much time into fantasy and this side gig that we all know and love. But it'll be good to spend some family time this weekend amidst all the craziness in sports that's going on as well. So should be a fun weekend, and happy Father's Day, man.
Yeah, you too. And Rob said he's got a question for us, so he's typing it right now. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this is going to be. It'll probably be something about Mitch Keller or a
pull hitter. He says, you want a question? And yeah. It sounds like he's fired up for this one.
So. Yeah, he's got one. He's stuck it out the entire show with us, so that's fun. But yeah, it's going to be a fun Father's Day. I'm looking forward to it. Big day. We're going to the water park. Looking forward to it. Father's Day is Sunday. He says, when will you do fab on Father's Day? Yeah,
it'll That's be Saturday. A good question.
I'm gonna do Saturday night and then cross my fingers, basically. And if I luckily it's not till 7 o'clock our time, so I can kind of squeeze something in towards the end.
Yeah, I write the I mentioned this earlier, but I write the fab column for HQ, and I typically write that during the day Friday and finish it up like Friday night. So I'm probably doing the Friday night thing, get it out of the way Friday night. That means I will have to to go back and look at things on Sunday just because so much changes. But that'll be my plan of attack. We're going to the aquarium on Sundays. And my 3-year-old went to the zoo for the first time this week and absolutely loved it. So
it's the best, man. It's the best.
Yeah, just seeing him light up. Yeah. I wasn't able to go with him this week. I was at work. But seeing the pictures and the videos of him light up, looking at animals and riding trains and stuff. So aquarium this weekend.
That'll be a blast. I did that last Easter, I think it was. So enjoy that. Have fun. We'll do this again next week. Everybody make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I am at BDNTrick, and this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 11. Catch you guys next time.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.